Our study today takes us into chapter 8 of the book of Revelation, a chapter of 13 verses. And when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand in the presence of God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given to him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne, and the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and cast it to the earth. There were voices, and thunderings, and lightnings, and an earthquake. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and there was hail and fire mingled with blood. They were cast on the earth, and the third part of the earth was burned up. The third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood. And a third part of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell from heaven a great star, burning like a torch, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains of waters, and the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood. Many men died of the waters, because the waters were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third of the sun was smitten, and the third of the moon, and the third of the stars, so that a third of them might be darkened, and the day should not shine for a third part thereof, and the night likewise. And I beheld, and I heard an angel flying in mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth, because of the other voices of the trumpets of the three angels which are yet to sound. Sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of the chapter. Now, as we begin to study chapter 8, we come to the opening of the seventh seal, which introduces the judgments associated with the seven trumpets that are blown by the angels. However, when we begin to study chapter 8, and it tells us that when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Now, thinking of this silent pause, some questions may arise in one's mind. For example, you learn from the reading of the scriptures that there are certain beings in heaven, those shining seraphim, according to Isaiah chapter 6, who are saying, Holy, 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 and they would appear to be praising God at all times. Then in our study of the book of Revelation, in chapter 5, the great host in heaven are sounding forth their praises, and it would seem that all heaven was resounding with the praises of the redeemed. They're giving glory to the Lamb. But when we come here to chapter 8, there is a stillness, a silence, as if heaven is waiting in suspense. And one asks the question, I wonder, why this silence in heaven? Now we might suggest, of course, that we keep in mind that there is no mention of any silence on earth, because you will remember at the end of chapter 6, under the opening of the sixth seal and the judgments that came upon the earth dwellers then, they're crying for the rocks and the mountains to fall upon them and to hide them from the face of him that sitteth upon the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. So there's no stillness on earth. There is confusion. But then when you come to this chapter 8, there's this silence. Now, it would appear that the following verses explain to us why there was such a silence. Because he said, "And I saw the seven angels who stand in the presence of God, and to them were given seven trumpets." It's obvious now, if those seven messengers of God are given the seven trumpets, something is about to happen. And so therefore there is this tense silence. There's preparation then by the seven angels with the trumpets. And according to what's going to follow, the fact of this preparation causes this silence to settle down on the hosts that are in heaven. But then in verse 3 it says, "And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer." Now here is brought before our vision this particular angel with a golden censer. "And there was given to him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne." Now the moment you think of one with the golden censer, your mind goes back to the Old Testament, and you begin to think again of the erecting of the tabernacle and the setting up of the priesthood in Israel, and how the priest went in, and when he took the incense, he sprinkled the incense on the golden altar which stood in front of the veil. But on one day in the year, called the Day of Atonement, he took a censer with live coals from off the altar, and he went in, inside the veil, and put the incense, which was beaten small, on the live coals on the censer. And that cloud of incense arose from the censer and the incense, and it arose as a cloud, and no doubt it rested in the glory cloud just above the cherubim, above the mercy seat. That would seem to be the picture given here of an angel having a golden censer. "There was given to him much incense." Now, without spiritualizing this too much, I think most Bible students will recognize that when you go back to the Old Testament, that incense, which was beaten small, every particle of it spoke in some way concerning Christ. And that cloud of incense that was arising was a prefiguring of the offering of Christ. So here we have an angel going in, and it says he came and stood at the altar having a golden censer. "There was given to him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints." Now I suggest that little statement may be the main reason for this silence in heaven, this pause, this waiting time, this silent pause. Who are these that are offering the prayers? He should offer it with the prayers of all the saints. Now, we have just completed a study of chapter 7. In chapter 7, and we recall this to your mind, chapter 7 is a parenthesis. It lies between the judgment under the sixth seal and what would happen under the opening of the seventh seal. And that chapter dealt, you will remember, with a number of people who were sealed from the 12 tribes of Israel, 144,000 who were sealed. And then the latter part of that chapter dealt with an innumerable multitude from the nations, that is, Gentiles. Now these were the ones who were marked out by God. The stamp was put on them. May I suggest that now God is giving time for them, since they have been specially marked out by God, that the trouble would not come upon them. Then, of course, if they were to be preserved and looked after during the tribulation period, surely it's the least they can do is get before God in true worship and in thanksgiving and offer their prayers. So here is the angel in heaven standing with the golden censer, and he's offering up the incense along with the prayers of all the saints. Now then, that being so, it says, and the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God out of the angel's hand. There is that then which speaks of Christ. There is that which speaks of the prayers being uttered by those who belong to God down here on earth, and these are being presented in the presence of God. Of course, it reminds us that our only access into God at any time was through the medium of the Lord Jesus Christ. We're told in the Epistle to the Hebrews to come boldly to the throne of grace, here to obtain mercy and find grace in time of need. For we can do that because we have a high priest who can be touched with a feeling of our infirmities, having been tempted in all points such as we are, but sin apart. And so therefore here is a case, there's silence in heaven, a waiting period for these saints on earth to present their prayers, and these prayers with the incense presented before God. But then, having presented the prayers, we saw now there was a preparation by the seven angels or the seven trumpets, prayers offered by the saints, the presentation of prayers and incense by the angel, leading to verses 5 and 6, which set before us the purposes of God about to be accomplished. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and cast it to the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound the purposes of God about to be accomplished. You see, the live coals from off the altar are used in order to cause the incense, the prayers, to ascend to the presence of God. But what doesn't go up before God is now going to be cast down upon the earth, and that fire coming down upon the earth is going to come down as judgment. So therefore, when the live coals are cast to the earth, then the result is voices and thundering, lightnings and an earthquake, again, intimating the commencement of a tremendous storm. This is just the beginning of things. The worst of the storm is yet to break under each of the blowing of the trumpets. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. So we're introduced now. From the silent pause, we move to the solemn punishments, verses 7 through 13. Now, we take note of this, that the judgments under the first four trumpets are inflicted on natural objects and only affect mankind indirectly. But the last three trumpets, which are named woe trumpets, introduce judgments directly against people. Again, we draw attention to this, that when the seals were being opened in chapter 6, the first four seals were closely connected, because under each of the first four seals, you recall, there was a rider on a horse. There was the white horse, the red horse, the black horse, and the pale horse. Now, when you come here to the blowing of the trumpets, the same order appears to be introduced. That is, there's a close connection between the first four trumpets, and then the last three trumpets are classified together. So you've got four and three, four and three. Now look at the first trumpet for a moment. The first angel sounded, and there was hail and fire mingled with blood. They were cast on the earth, and the third part of the earth was burned up, and the third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Now, it's worthy of note, as you come down through this chapter, and the trumpets are blown, and the judgments are poured forth, you should note that expression, the third part. You'll find that the third is mentioned about 12 times in these few verses. For example, in verse 7, it says the third part of the earth and the third part of trees. When you come to verse 8, it's a third part of the sea. Verse 9, the third part of the living creatures, and the third part of the ships. In verse 10, is the third part of the rivers. Verse 11, third part of the waters. Verse 12, the third part of the sun, the third part of the moon, the third part of the stars, so that a third of them might be darkened. And then there is a third part thereof, and the night likewise, and so on. The third is mentioned about 12 times in these verses. That seems to be significant. Now, with the first trumpet judgment, the effect is upon the earth. With the judgment of this first trumpet, you have the trees, the green grass, being destroyed. These things are indicative of agricultural and commercial prosperity. The man's boasted prosperity then ends in calamity when his food is destroyed. Now I emphasize again, it seems obvious that this judgment does not come directly upon the persons of men and women living on the earth, but will affect them indirectly, because if the agricultural life is interfered with and the commercial prosperity is gone, that's going to have an indirect effect upon men and women. So the first judgment falls upon the trees and the green grass. Naturally, that's going to affect the food. And if people don't have food, it's like a famine, then of course they're going to feel the effect of it, but indirectly. Now, the second trumpet is blown when you come to verses 8 and 9. It says, and the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. Now, when you look at that, as the second trumpet is sounded, this is going to affect the ships. That's what it says now. And a third part of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. So it's going to affect the creatures who live in the sea, and it's going to affect the ships. First thing to strike your attention is a little clause, as it were. Here is a definite indication of symbolism. The mountain, it is said, is not a literal mountain, but as it were a mountain. There are two possibilities then. It is all symbolism, or the mountain alone is symbolic. We have previously noted that the earth is frequently a symbol of Palestine, and that the sea, by contrast, represents the Gentile nations. This judgment then, if taken symbolically, is a judgment that falls more especially upon the Gentile nations. Jeremiah speaks of a burnt mountain. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountains of the Lord, which destroyeth all the earth. Thou will stretch out mine hand upon thee, and throw thee down from the rocks, and will make thee a burnt mountain. That's from Jeremiah 51. Our Lord also spoke of a mountain that should be removed and cast into the sea when the disciples would have unwavering faith. There is in view here a great power, filled with eruptive forces, which shall be cast into the midst of the nations. There are prophecies in the Old Testament that speak of the destruction of the fish of the sea and the commerce of the earth. You'll find that in Hosea chapter 4 and Zephaniah chapter 1 and Isaiah chapter 2. And again, I say that since the coming of this age in which we live, in where we have all this nuclear power, all of these things become much more literally possible than we had ever thought before. We know that a whole island was lifted up bodily by the explosion of a hydrogen bomb, and that it was cast into the sea, and that fish were filled with radioactive elements and were capable of causing sickness hundreds of miles away. Now, if man can do that with his little power, what do you think God can do? And if God sends this mountain, as it's called, or like unto a mountain, casts it into the sea, then don't you see it's going to have an effect? First of all, it's going to have an effect on the fish of the sea, the living creatures in the sea. And it's also going to have an effect on the third part of the ships in the sea. They'll be destroyed. And so when this judgment falls, while these symbols may be used in the book of Revelation, the effect will be literal. There's going to be a judgment, and it's going to come upon the water, upon the sea. For you remember now, the first trumpet sounded, and that came upon the earth. The second trumpet is sounded, and the judgment comes upon the sea. Under the second trumpet, with the third part of ships destroyed, this will have a serious effect upon the commercial life of the world, because the distribution of goods and food will be crippled. And now that brings us in our study to the blowing of the third trumpet. Verse 10 says, and the third angel sounded, and there fell from heaven a great star, burning like a torch, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains of waters. Now, this third trumpet then brings a judgment affecting the waters. Not the sea now, but the fresh waters. Four things should be noted in connection with the third trumpet. First of all, the course of the star. It fell from heaven. There is the character of this star. It is named wormwood and bitterness. The contamination or the contaminating influence. Third part of waters became wormwood. The calamity it brought upon men. Many men died of the waters. This trumpet judgment intimates, as it were, a judgment of terrible severity, and in some respects even more awful than the preceding ones. There fell out of the heaven a great star. The heaven is the source of authority. It is a definitely fixed position. Hence the introduction of the thought of the heaven. All spiritual, civil, and political authority has its source above. According to Daniel chapter 4, verse 26, the heavens do rule. Under the two preceding trumpets, the instruments of judgment were cast upon the earth and sea respectively, but from whence we are not informed. Here, this apostate dignitary fell out of the heaven. The word cast would imply the exercise of irresistible power on the part of the unseen actor, as also the violence of the judgment, whereas fell, as also in chapter 9, verse 1, would rather point to a sudden, unexpected downfall. The star, as a symbol, is one of frequent occurrence in the apocalypse, and denotes a ruler, or one occupying a place of influence and position in responsibility to God. You could compare chapters 12, verses 1 through 4, 6 and 13. Supremacy is denoted by the sun. Derived and subordinate authority is figured by the moon, while stars point to lesser authorities. You'll get that if you go back to the book of Genesis. This great star evidently symbolizes a distinguished ruler responsible as set in the moral firmament to give light in the then dark night of the world's history. But he is an apostate personage, one under the immediate judgment of God, burning as a torch. In this respect, like the great mountain burning with fire. So that word great is attached to the mountain, also to the star. Only in the former, I suggest, a corporate power or system is referred to, whereas in the latter, it's an exalted individual. Now, who this degraded and apostate person is, we are not informed. Some may have their ideas, but we're not told. Then again, it fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains of waters. Waters in general signify peoples, you know. The sea points to a state of commotion, of unrest amongst those peoples. Then you read about floods, fullness of earthly blessings. Get that in the prophecy of Isaiah. As also earthly calamities, Amos 8:8. Rivers. The ordinary life of a nation or people characterized by certain principles. Go back to Ezekiel chapter 29, Isaiah 18. Fountains are the source of the principles and influences which act upon the life of a nation, according to Joel 3:18, Jeremiah 6:7. Now the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became Wormwood. Many of the men died because they were made bitter. The name Wormwood is significant of character. Many of the older expositors regard the personage here as Satan, but has already been remarked, we have no means to identify the person by name. The geographical area affected is the third part. The fountains, the sources of national life, are poisoned. All under the withering influence of this fallen being partake of his character. Wormwood. Evidently this is a reference to that interesting incident in Israel's history detailed in Exodus 15. There, the bitter waters were made sweet. But here in Revelation, the sweet waters are made bitter. National life and character are corrupted. A judicial dealing of an intensely solemn character overtakes a third part of the nations. Their springs of action, their motives, principles, and moral life are poisoned, with the result that many die. It is not physical but moral death that is in question, no doubt, truly more awful than the former. When you look at these bitter ingredients infused into the waters by the fall of this great star, the wonder is not that many died, but the great wonder is that any lived. And now we come to consider the blowing of the fourth trumpet. Verse 12, And the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was smitten, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them might be darkened, and the day should not shine for a third part thereof, and the night likewise. Now, under the former trumpets, we have seen the judgment of God laid upon things, upon trees, grass, and so on. But with the sounding of the fourth trumpet, the judgment falls on things astronomical, the sun, the moon, and stars. We've been looking at things happening on the earth between trees and grass and in the waters and so on. But now we're looking above. Here the sun, the moon, and the stars. Now, as under the sixth seal, you will remember in chapter 6, these things also were affected. They are now the object of God's visitation. Both day and night are to be darkened, and thus add to the reign of terrors already commenced with the sounding of the three former trumpets. From the earth and the sea we now turn to the heavens and see the divine draping of solar, stellar, and lunar bodies. This astronomical disturbance is the fulfillment of prophetic forecasts. Jesus spoke of this eclipse and spoke of it as signs when he said, And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars. Find our way back in Luke 21. In fact, the sun, moon, and stars are originally placed in the heavens, not only to be light bearers and to divide the day from the night and for seasons and days and years, but they were also placed there for signs. Find that in Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 through 16. The order in Revelation is that we find in Genesis. God made two great lights, the sun, the greater to rule the day, the moon, the lesser to rule the night, the stars, he made the stars also, Genesis 1. He who made them for the light now uses them to make darkness. You can read also in Matthew chapter 24, verse 29. It is interesting in passing to notice the fourth day of the creative, or rather the recreative week, and it is the fourth trumpet that smites and shades them. The prophets foretold this natural and supernatural phenomenon following the judgment of the fourth trumpet. Said Isaiah, Behold, darkness and sorrow, and the light is darkened in the heavens thereof. Here the prophet sees the human sorrow and nocturnal darkness of these days. So also did Amos the prophet catch four gleams of these times of distress and darkness and declared that God would cause the sun to go down at noon and I will darken the earth in the clear day. Amos chapter 8 verse 9. Here then is midnight at midday and a clear day turned into a lightless night. Said Jeremiah, and the heavens, and they had no light, Jeremiah 4:23. Ezekiel summarized these tribulation days in a graphic and dramatic manner, and he said, I will cover the heavens, make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. The bright lights of heaven will I make dark over thee, and set darkness upon thy land, saith the Lord God. Taken from Ezekiel 32. Joel, the prophet of the day of the Lord, foretold this day and the judgment thereof. John fills in with detail what Joel saw in general. For in the book of Joel we read, The sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. Now let us conceive, if we can, sunless, moonless, and starless days and nights when the judgments of the Lord are in the earth. The partial eclipse under the fourth trumpet is quite serious enough. What will the total eclipse be before the great and terrible day of the Lord. But what will be the result of this diminishing of light both in the day and at night, and especially in the light of the results of the former trumpet judgments? The first trumpet fell upon the products of agriculture and horticulture, the grass and the trees. There was a reduction of field and fruit to one-third. The second trumpet fell upon things aquatic, and one-third of fish and food destroyed, with transportation reduced one-third, thus greatly interfering with import and export. The third trumpet fell upon rivers and fountains used for domestic purpose, with a reduction to the amount of one-third. Of course, this greatly affected both beasts for food and fruit and field production, as well as water for irrigation and distillation. This fourth trumpet reduces the light of sun by day and moon by night, and the stars, and of course this also retards vegetation, for the influence of both sun, moon, and stars upon vegetable growth is established beyond controversy. The reduction of one-third of these luminaries will affect the earth greatly. How often have we heard agriculturists and horticulturists say, too much cloudy weather, not enough sun, the crops are rotting in the ground, too many clouds, not enough sunshine, the sun by day and the moon by night, have a mission to the growing things of the earth. There are wise agriculturists who speak of planting in the light of the moon. Think of these things and consider the effect of these trumpet judgments upon all foodstuff, products of provision for man's sustenance. Surely the famine of these can be but a natural and forthcoming result, as well as terrible pestilence. Now we believe the Bible means what it says, and says what it means. And we understand the sun, moon, and the stars to be the actual literal sun, moon, and stars. Of course, they could also symbolize some of the great ruling powers. Now, in the book of Revelation, of course, a sign, a symbol, or a figure of speech is clearly designated, and only such may be used figuratively. To treat this book otherwise will end in hopeless confusion, and certainly will never lead to a sound interpretation. Now, the closing verse of the chapter becomes very interesting. And I beheld, and I heard an angel flying in mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth, because of the other voices of the trumpets of the three angels which are yet to sound. Now, following the blowing of the first four trumpets then, we have this verse like a little intermission. It's pronouncing, as it were, loud enough for people to hear. It's like a universal announcement of what was going to follow in what is called the three woe trumpets. It's a strange thing that both the eye and the ear were engaged here so far as John was concerned, for he says he beheld, that is, he saw, and he heard. Now, I read to you the word as it's found in the ordinary King James Version, where it says an angel. But I noticed that some of the translations and some of the commentators change that to the word eagle, and it would read, And I saw and I heard an eagle flying in mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, 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 and so on. Now, the idea is this, that while the authorized version reads angel, then these others read eagle. Now, whether it's angel or eagle, I don't think it makes much difference to the sense of the verse, except there are certain missions that are entrusted to angels. You'll find one when you come to chapter 14. But then we've got to remember this, that mid-heaven, or the firmament, is the sphere that can be traversed by both angels and eagles, so that they could scan the earth from its centre to its remotest bounds. But of course, you'll also find that angels can pronounce judgments, and you'll also find that eagles are associated with judgment, that where the carcasses are, there the eagles will be found. In fact, they'll be called upon to come and feed upon the flesh of those who have been destroyed in the great battle of Armageddon. Of course, it has been well said that an angel could be a messenger of mercy, but here is one who is a herald of judgment. The triple cry of woe finds its fitting announcement, of course, by the eagle. In its rapid and lofty flight across the meridian sky, it aloud proclaims the coming doom of what might be called the Christianized portion of the earth, commonly referred to today as Christendom, of those who proudly rejected the heavenly calling. And of course, Paul wrote concerning the heavenly calling, and he also wrote concerning those who rejected it. He said concerning them, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, who mind earthly things. A special class is here singled out from earth's inhabitants, a moral class, spoken of as those that dwell upon the earth, and twice previously referred to, chapter 3:10 and 6:10. On these apostates, the worst in these dark and evil times, direct judgment is publicly and loudly announced. A more fitting symbol could not be employed than an eagle in its aerial flight across the heaven, scanning from afar its prey. The eagle is the harbinger of approaching judgment. You find that if you read back in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 49, also in Matthew 24, verse 28. Now the four preceding judgments were of a general character, but in those to come, the climax of horror is reached, hence this preliminary announcement. And so this chapter would finish with telling us now that the four judgments that have fallen are past, and the final three blowing of the trumpet are going to bring judgments that are called woe. And when God pronounces a woe upon mankind, you can look for God's wrath coming upon the unbeliever. Of course, the first two trumpets will be war trumpets. That's the fifth and sixth, of course, chapter 9. Then when it comes to the third war trumpet, that will introduce the pouring out of the vials of God's wrath. I trust now that these comments will cause you to consider again this chapter and read it carefully.